You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Everybody, and welcome back to the Fenway Rundown podcast, Mass Lives Red Sox podcast, on the original eve of opening day. Actually, we are two eves away now that opening day has been postponed from Thursday to Friday at Yankee Stadium. The Red Sox with Nathan Eovaldi will take on Gerrit Cole and the Yankees at 1 o'clock on Friday. Chris Smith is already in New York. He'll be joining us in a second. I'm in Boston. I will be heading down to New York to cover opening day. Plenty of coverage on obviously the whole season, but you know, especially the first game coming on masslive.com. So we thought we'd do kind of our full season preview, you know, what to expect from the Red Sox this year, what to expect in the early goings or takeaways from spring training. And as always, welcoming back Chris Smith, co-beat writer at Mass Live covering the Red Sox. Chris, you were there for the last week of camp. I was there for, well, you were there for before camp, the first week, and then the last week. I was there for the first week in the middle portion, so we're both down in Fort Myers for a long time. Number one takeaway, it wasn't as hot as it normally was down there, so that was pretty good. But what else did you take away from your time there? What was the big storyline that you think dominated, if any, or what was your just general thoughts on the vibe at Fenway South this year?
I think the season's going to come down to pitching early here. Like the starting rotation, there's question marks in it without Chris Sale, especially now that he's on the 60-day IL for the first 2 months. He's going to miss. He's not going to be able to come back till June 6th at the earliest. And so, other guys have to step up. So we'll see. I mean, look at, you got some young guys, and like Tanner Houck, and Garrett Whitlock's going to start the year in the bullpen. But with Houck, he had trouble throwing some strikes in spring training. And then I think you have to look at the bullpen. I mean, there was different things throughout. It's like, spring training stats are spring training stats. A lot of relievers, there's been very good relievers over time that have had terrible spring training stats. And then when the regular season starts, they turn it on. And so you can't put too much stock into spring training stats. However, there were concerns about certain things that were going on, beyond just the stats, Matt Barnes' velocity, and Jake Diekman, who they just, picked up as a free agent signing, his slider was 5 miles. It was basically at 78 miles per hour during spring. And last year it was at 83, or in every year it's at 83 for him. So Core had mentioned the decrease in velocity with that. So will we see, will we see that slider back to 83 when games start here? Will we see, Matt Barnes not throwing 92, 93, maybe getting it up to 95? There's questions in the bullpen, definitely.
Yeah, to me, I think the bullpen is clearly the largest area of concern on the team. I thought when they signed Matt Strom, they signed Jake Diekman, to me, that was like, okay, those are a couple of moves, but it feels like there's another shoe that's going to drop. And then, it never really happened. So I think that is kind of the major storyline heading in. And when you remove Tanner Houck from the bullpen, or you remove Garrett Whitlock from the closer role, which it seemed like they're not going to go down that road, they're going to have him pitch in, multi-inning high leverage situations, you're suddenly asking a lot out of a lot of guys that, aren't really used to these types of things. I mean, just look at the opening day roster, which we'll break down in a second. But, Cutter Crawford's going to be asked to pitch big innings. Tyler Danish, who Red Sox fans might not have even heard of until a couple of days ago, also might be tasked with some of those roles, whether it's Austin Davis or Matt Barnes. We saw what happened, not just velocity in spring training, but the end of last year too. It's just a lot of big asks from a lot of guys that you just don't know that you can trust. And to me, that's the biggest question mark heading in.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like Strom has had a good spring training in like stuff wise too. 95 and Ansel Robles is interesting. He comes out, first game, the major league game, and actually first game on the backfields, he was at 95. And, we don't really remember sometimes that he was pretty good last year and he actually had four saves. So who's the closer? I know Red Sox stats on Twitter actually mentioned Strom as, a possibility, that's like, who are we going to see? I mean, could Robles be the guy? I don't know.
Right. No, I mean, we won't know. And probably we won't even know on opening day, because I feel like Whitlock's just going to get the bulk of the work at the end of the game. We'll take until, Saturday or Sunday when they have a lead late to figure that out. I think a big takeaway, for me from spring training, obviously Trevor Story was the story for a lot of it. The Chris Sale thing, secondary, it feels like it slipped, not under the radar per se, but still a major loss. And now we see that because he's on the 60-day injured list, he's going to miss at least the first 2 months. The Red Sox were counting on a lot from Sale, and the fact that he's once again going to be sidelined to start the season, I think, is a pretty big deal. And we don't know exactly when he's going to come back. We just know it won't be before June 6th. And the other thing that I think was my big takeaway, and obviously, as we record this on Wednesday afternoon, there is still time for this to change, but, sources are indicating that's probably unlikely, that there are no extensions done. We've talked to a lot of players this spring about wanting to sign long-term deals, whether it be Nathan Eovaldi or Kike Hernandez, JD Martinez, obviously the big two, and Rafael Devers and Xander Bogaerts, and nothing got done. And it seems like there wasn't a lot of progress with, those types of guys either. And to me, I think that is, you have basically, I think, to give Steve Peralt credit for once, I think he said it, it's like senior year and everybody's going into it realizing this might be the last ride for a core that's been, really here for a while. I think that can't be understated, and it'll be interesting to see. I said on the radio the other day somewhere, if the Red Sox don't meet their expectations and they're out of it at the deadline, they're going to have, one of the best classes of players to sell ever. Bogaerts on the market, Devers would maybe be on the market, Eovaldi, Martinez, Kike, like these are a lot of players that teams would be very interested in. I know Red Sox fans don't even want to hear that theory, but they would have probably the number one system in the in baseball by a lot if they were to trade all those guys at the deadline if they were out of contention. But for now, walk years for everybody except Devers, who's a year or 2 years away, and it seems like not a lot of progress made on any of those fronts.
Yeah, I mean, was there going to be much progress made on Bogaerts? I know that, is he going to take another hometown discount, or right, does he really want to hit the market? His agent, let's remember, is Scott Boras. And, he did take that hometown discount first time around. And so, but I think the big one is Devers, and you still have another offseason to, to settle things or try to, get an extension done with him. You look at it and it, I heard a lot of people saying, what were they doing? This should have been the priority number one, these mm-hmm. guys. And, you look at it and they didn't really have too much time, right. They had a lockout for 90 days and they couldn't talk to anybody. And then, when they come back, they have to, figure out their team. And right. there's
and
more
a lot
decisions.
Of that time was devoted to Trevor Story, obviously.
Yeah. There's more things that are going on than just, your own guys and contract extensions. And that has to fall down on the list. Now, with a guy like Eovaldi, we saw with Chris Sale, I don't think they would be smart to extend him right now. Mm-hmm. We saw with Chris Sale, they signed him before that, what was it, the 2019 season, and he's only pitched 47 and two-thirds regular season innings since the contract went into effect in 2020. Eovaldi's a guy that historically he has broken down. He's been pretty good the past couple of years, and he's been important for them. And it was, if you look at the contract that Dombrowski signed with him, it looks good. I mean, where would they be without him over the past, this year and last year, especially, right. I still think you need to wait with him and see what he does this year. And I feel like that with a lot of pitchers pitching wise.
Yeah, no, I get it. And, there obviously is the risk there. He's not as old as you think he is, but he's still, into his 30s. And that's something that the Red Sox, other than the David Price deal and obviously the Chris Sale deal, have tried to avoid. I know those are two major exceptions, but still the point holds. when you look at this opening day roster, I think, you know, from my end, and we just did a breakdown on it today of kind of the 25 guys that are locked in and four guys going for three spots there. What are your big takeaways on what it looks like compared to what you thought it would a couple weeks ago? Obviously, like I had mentioned, you know, Tyler Danish looks like he's got a good shot to be there. Cutter Crawford making the team is a big surprise. And Darwinson Hernandez not making the team, I guess, is the bigger surprise on the other end there. When you look at it, what do you see? What strikes you specifically?
Yeah, so obviously the outfield defense is better than it was last year. However, so it's very similar in like the Trevor story. So Bloom wanted to get a right-handed bat, mm-hmm. and he got the best right-handed bat possible, you know, and think about positions later. And so, you know, you're going to sacrifice maybe a little bit defensively, like you did with Schwarber last year, with Arroyo going out to the outfield for a little bit here.
Or JD.
I think that's the way that Bloom rolls, right? He just wants to get the best player and then figure out from there, you know? But I think that we're going to see interesting stuff in the outfield early, you know, that I didn't expect. I mean, I thought that, you know, I always believed that the Red Sox would be interested in a shortstop. And if that might be the route that they go with the right-handed hitter, but I was kind of more expecting, you know, an outfielder, right-handed hitting outfielder. So, you know, I think that, so that's really the difference between what I thought what the roster, you know, would look like and what it does look like right now. And so, I mean, Arroyo, if he's good out there, that helps a lot of stuff
if eventually Dahlbeck has to move there to make room for Casas or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I mean, he, you know, like Arroyo had over 500 OPS against, left-handers last year. And you look at
over what?
Against left-handers.
He said over 500 OPS.
500 slugging percentage. Sorry. That wouldn't be as good.
No, it wouldn't.
If you look at his numbers and like a guy like Justin Upton, who, you know, is a possibility, I guess, when he, you know, is going to be signing and stuff like that. But yeah. His numbers are better than Justin Upton's against left-handers last year. And so we'll see. I mean, he seems to be pretty confident about it. I don't know. What else do you think roster-wise? Crawford's interesting. I mean, like, you know, I've looked at him and Winkowski and, you know, some of these guys that were projected to be starters in Worcester's rotation as guys that could fill a type of role that Garrett Whitlock did. I'm not saying that they could be as effective as Garrett Whitlock was last year, but fill that type of role. And I've always thought that with Crawford, he throws strikes. He throws hard.
Yep.
He's throwing 97. And so, let's see if he can, you know, be that Whitlock type guy too. Maybe then that allows him to do something, you know, else with Whitlock.
Right. Well, I think the takeaways for me are they must be impressed with Arroyo and the early returns with him in right field to not even keep, you know, Ref Snyder on the roster or go after, you know, one of these guys. There's, you know, this year, there's usually a lot more guys who opt out or are released who are on the open market. This year with the 28 man roster, there's not as many. You know, Justin Upton is that, you know, prime name and he'd basically be free. So I think that's an interesting one because he was DFA'd by the Angels. So far, according to somebody I talked to today, no link between the Red Sox and him, no interest. And I don't think they were in on Jake Marisnyk. He was released by the Rangers, right-handed hitting outfielder. He signed with the Pirates earlier in the day. The other thing to me is how quickly they were willing to go with Houck instead of Whitlock in the rotation. You know, like
good point.
It was really kind of automatic where, well, Tanner's number three and Walk is number four. And then they held out on Hill and Whitlock for the fifth spot instead of, you know, going with Houck as the, you know, maybe relief ace and stretching Whitlock out more. So that to me, I think kind of stood out. That was an early in camp thing.
With that, right, that one thing right there is could that be, and I asked Cora, like with Whitlock, do you need Whitlock in your bullpen? Cause you're not sure about your bullpen. Like, yeah, you know,
probably,
and I guess how could have played that type of role in the bullpen, but we know that Whitlock can do it effectively. Right.
Yeah.
And actually another interesting thing that Cora said the other day was that if Sale was healthy, the initial plan was to have, you know, the piggyback starter type situation with Sale starting and Houck extended on those days. And then the plan all along was to kind of match Rich Hill and Whitlock because of their contrasting styles and stuff. So it's interesting, like, how things could have looked if Sale was, you know, healthy.
Yeah, I mean, the Red Sox seem to really like that piggyback idea, which is kind of, you know, just totally reinvents the way we look at things. But if you, in that scenario, if you had 2 out of 5 days where you're using one long reliever, like, you're saving the bullpen, which is not that good for, you know, the rest of the days. It seems like right now, you know, if Rich Hill goes 5, they're going to be fine with Garrett Whitlock going 4 to try to win them a game on those days. It's not the way we're used to seeing things, but the way it is right now, I think it's probably the way they're going to go.
Yeah, they have extra guys right now to do it too, you know.
Which I know you like prospects and pay attention to them more than I do. Not Crawford, because we talked about him, but any other guys really stand out to you in camp or particularly impressive? I know there's a couple you've written about in the last few days.
Yeah, well, one is the Cora mentioned German, mm-hmm. who, you know, and he's a
from
guy
from the Adam Ottavino trade.
Yeah, and he's a guy that, like, he's not on the 40-man roster, but he's throwing, you know, 98, 99, and he started the year at Portland. He should be up to Worcester fairly soon. You know, that could just be a numbers thing with roster-wise. Mm-hmm. And so he's an interesting guy. I think Josh Wachowski, who I just mentioned before, like, you know, he's a guy that, you know, can help out of the bullpen if things, you know, if they need that. And, you know, he's going to start the year in Worcester. Other guys, like, you know, it's interesting that Darwinson Hernandez is down there, and I see why they want to do it. They want him to get work in between every day. He was sent to Worcester, obviously, and they want him to start, pitch 2 or 3 innings, and then really work on his mechanics because they know the potential that he has. I mean, look at you. He averaged 7 walks, and he still had a 3-something ERA. That's how nasty his stuff is, right? Like,
strikeout total is always
many
high.
People. And so he's pretty nasty. So if they can get him going and figure out, like, how to throw strikes, you know, release point, that type of stuff, then, you know, he's another guy that in that bullpen this year that you can see.
You know, generally, he seems like a guy that, you know, has – they always talk about he's not a prospect, but he still is. And just the way that he hasn't pitched that much in the majors. I mean, 2019 was, you know, his debut year, got his feet wet. 2020, he barely pitched. 2021, he was hurt for a few months. So still a young guy, still a lot of potential there. And, you know, I don't think they're giving up on him. They just think early in the season, he's better off getting in that routine and getting his work in that way, which is interesting. What are your major storylines heading into this season? For me, there's two that stand out. Number one, roster has a lot of talent, but I think it's incomplete. You know, we talked about the outfield there. Arroyo could solve that problem. We talked about the bullpen. They're going to get creative there. But, you know, a scout texted me the other day, and he's asking me what I thought on the bullpen, and I gave him my thoughts, which don't matter as much as his. And he said, yeah, man, that pen is absolutely brutal. So that's, you know, a major league scout's thoughts on what the Red Sox bullpen group is like. So that's, you know, take that for what it's worth. And I think, you know, industry-wide, there's no consensus on who the closer is going to be. I think I wouldn't be surprised if it was Strom. I wouldn't be surprised if it was Barnes or Robles or whoever it may be. You know, it kind of seems like they're almost angling toward that closer by committee, you know, roving good reliever, but Cora's really wants to avoid that after 19, how it was a disaster. And that other part of that to me is that this is not the year to have an incomplete team for a couple of reasons. Number one, what I just talked about, not a lot of free agents out there this time of year, which there usually are. I mean, we've seen the Red Sox pick up guys right before the beginning of the season that have ended up contributing. You know, I know these guys aren't big names, but, you know, they signed Zach Godley, who was not good, but he ended up pitching a lot of innings in 2020. They picked up, you know, a couple guys right before the season each of the last few years. I think, you know, Sandy Leon a few years back, right? That was right before the beginning of the season or in spring training. Those types of guys you're just not finding. So kind of have to go with what you have and barring a surprise trade. And the other piece of that is if you feel like you're short in July before the trade deadline, this is not a good year. And it's not going to be a good year really ever with the expanded playoffs, because there's going to be so many teams that are sellers. There's always going to be a seller's market. You're going to have so many teams that are in the mix that think that they can contend, and there's only going to be a few teams out of it. And so the trade deadline, I think, is going to suffer in a big way with the expanded playoffs, because you're just not going to have that flood of good players. You're going to have to pay out the nose to do so. So for an incomplete roster, it doesn't line up, I think, particularly well to me. They need guys to step up from the inside, whether that's Arroyo and Wright or Dahlbeck and Wright, or whether that's, you know, one of these guys coming up and being, you know, Whitlock-like in the bullpen. They need internal guys to really step up. For you, you know, I know you already said pitching is the major thing heading in, but what else stands out?
Yeah, well, when you say it's not a good time, you know, for that, and you make 2 points there. Also, another point is that the AL East is stacked, you know, this year, and the Yankees, the Blue Jays are, you know, added big names. They lost big names, obviously, but they added big names.
And Vegas has the Blue Jays like the second most likely team to win the World Series.
So you're playing in the hardest, the Red Sox, not you, Cotillo, but the Red Sox are playing in the hardest division in the American League. And, you know, and I mean, there's a possibility that all three wild cards could come out of that. And, and maybe in baseball, you know, hardest in baseball. So you, you know, it's going to be difficult. You're playing, you know, you're playing in a tough division here, and you have an incomplete roster.
Right.
So, you know, maybe they make a trade. You know, there's who's available with Oakland still?
Montas, I guess.
There you go. Make that trade.
Anybody who breathes is available with Oakland.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, we'll see.
Or Laureano, we'll see how, though, he has suspension stuff. He's still suspended for a portion.
And, you know, and as we know, Bloom's pretty fluid with the roster. He's willing to pick up guys. He's willing to do, you know, different things. The roster's not going to look the same right now as it May, June that it is right now, but we'll see. Right.
I just wanted to kind of bring up, spring training was such a rush. There was so much going on that it's kind of hard to look ahead, you know, at the schedule and look at and be like, you know, do that Mike and Mad Dog thing where you kind of go through and say, you know, week one win, week two loss, like they do for the NFL season. But there's kind of no breaks for the Red Sox early on. Like, you'll know in the first 20 games if they're any good or not. You know, they don't have like the Orioles for eight times in April or whatever. Just looking through it, you're six straight on the road to start, three at the Yankees, three at the Tigers. I think the Tigers are a team, to use another, you know, sports book reference, Vegas said today the Tigers have the most the highest percentage of bettors on their over total. So the Vegas sharps think that the Tigers are going to win more than they're projected. I forget exactly what the number was, but people are high on them. Then you come home, you have four against the Twins, which, you know, the Twins still have talent. I know they were bad last year, but they obviously reloaded. Correa, Sonny Gray, some of these other guys, Urshela, Gary Sanchez, that's a talented roster. And then you start this gauntlet of three against the Blue Jays, three against the Rays, four against the Blue Jays before you catch that break and finally play the Orioles on the road for the first weekend at the end of April. I mean, you're looking at your first 23, 24 games against potential playoff contenders. Like, you're going to know right away if this team has a chance.
Yeah, and I think you're going to know, I've just been so excited about spring training ending because, you know, we get to actually see what this team is.
Right.
It's very difficult to know what this team is right now based on spring training. And I mean, their offense is really good. And, you know, and they, you know, but as you said, the bullpen's like, I just can't wait to see what happens with the bullpen. I are they going to be able to string it together? Are some of these guys better than, you know, we think? Right. Or is it just going to be an absolute disaster? That's the awesome part of the regular season about to start. I just can't wait to see the direction this team goes.
You're going
to
know either way. For sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome either way.
Chris Smith, so enthusiastic about the job.
I actually like it. I'm excited about the spring training gets me so tired that you're excited about the regular season.
That's
you're
true.
Excited about actually starting like real games and seeing what actually happens.
Right. That's why I just took a 5-day sabbatical in North Carolina while you were covering the dog days down in Florida. So thanks so much. These will be, you know, fully in print for us, I think, either Thursday morning or Friday morning, dependent our predictions on what every team in baseball will do, World Series picks from the panel. We have, you know, five, we have four BBWA members and the two of us, Matt Votor and Jim Pignatello at Mass Live, and we have a former one in Chris Mason who covered the Red Sox before he covered the Patriots. But you'll see all our predictions there. But I wanted to kind of put Smith on the spot and also give my own here on the Red Sox record and where they finish in the division. To me, I have them at 90 wins, third place. It's a cop-out, right down the middle type answer. I think they're going to be a tick below what they were last year just because I think the bullpen is so much worse. And I think that they, you know, get one of the wild cards and have to battle it out and hopefully for them make a run similar to the one they made last year to go deep. But I just think, you know, the division's better than it was a year ago. I think the Yankees and Rays do have question marks, but the division's better. It's going to be the same type of slog. And like I said, in April, you get a pretty good indication. What do you have for win total and where they finish in the East?
Well, Cancillo, I still have to do this thing that you sent me, but off the top of my head right now, I would say 87, 88 wins, and I would put them, you know, third or fourth. I'll have to think about both those. But, there's definitely a chance that they can make the playoffs, as one of those wild cards. As I said, all three teams from
four.
Four teams from the East could make the postseason. So we'll see. I just right now, what did I think I had them at 85 wins last year preseason.
You're trending up.
So, like, I mean, you should think that they're going to be better, but
yeah. Well, I have them a couple games worse, but that's because I just think the margin of error is so small in this division and this year. I think it's going to be, you know, they're all going to be stacked up. They're going to be beating the hell out of each other. And, you know, if there's unvaccinated guys, you know, people don't want to talk about that because they don't want to bring it into sports. But the reality of it is the Blue Jays are going to have the greatest home field advantage in the history of baseball. So Boston, that's going to come into play.
Boston should implement that.
Yeah.
Just for the Red Sox, right?
Right.
Just like, oh, that would be great if, like, all these awesome stars couldn't play in Boston. So, that would happen, right? If the mayor was a huge Red Sox fan.
That's true. Yeah. I don't think that's the reason they're doing it in Toronto, but regardless.
All right. Whatever. These are the things that cross my brain and the stupid things that cross my brain.
It's a wild, wild place up there. That's Chris Smith. I'm Chris Cattell. We'll both be in New York for opening day on Friday, not Thursday, and obviously covering everything that happens between now and the end of the season.